Welcome to the Bike Talk with Dave podcast. I'm your host, Dave Mabel. Thanks tons for tuning in. Since starting this podcast more than 2 years ago, I can't believe it when I say that, I've wanted to talk to a team that had completed the Cape Epic together. Well, a couple of months ago, I saw that a good friend of the podcast, Hannah Schell, was headed to South Africa with a friend of hers, Starla Tettergreen. So I immediately shot her a note asking if the two of them would come on when they got home from the other side of the world, and she enthusiastically agreed. Fast forward to April, and the three of us found a time to hop on a call together to talk about their experience in the 8-stage mountain bike race, which is awesome. But even more awesome was getting to know Starla, which leads me to the very buried lead. Starla, who's raced professionally for nearly 2 decades now, was recently diagnosed with MS. Yet she overcame the challenges of really what can be a debilitating disease to race in one of the hardest events on earth. She's quite an amazing role model for women, and really for all of us who face difficult challenges and roll on in spite of them, and finding creative ways to overcome the extra challenges that they may present. Really, it was a treat to talk Cape Epic with both Hannah and Starla, but I also really hope you enjoy getting to know Starla and all that she's doing to encourage women around the world to get active and stay active. Hannah Schell, welcome back to the show. Starla Tettergreen, is that how we say that?
Yes.
Tettergreen, good to meet you and welcome to Bike Talk with Dave. I'm so stoked to have you guys on. I mentioned as we were talking before that, Hannah, I mean, I feel like we go way back now. But I saw you were doing Cape Epic and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to hear about this race. It's been, kind of this mysterious, mystique race for me for, a long time. I don't even know how old it is, but I feel like it's been around a long time. And, I was like, gosh, I have to hear about Hannah's race. And of course it's a team or a duo. They call you a duo team race. So Starla, you and Hannah went over, to Africa and dove into the Cape Epic. So anyway, thanks for coming on, you guys. I'm stoked to hear about this race.
Thanks for having us, Dave. It's great to be here. It's great to have Starla here with me. I'm excited for everyone to get to hear more about her and tell you about Cape Epic.
Yeah, and Starla, I understand you might have stayed a few extra days and done some elephant and giraffe and zebra sightseeing.
Yeah, definitely. Since we were going all the way to South Africa, we felt like we needed a little bit of time to actually see the country beyond just the race. And so, yeah, definitely had some fun getting to see the wildlife and seeing different parts of the country. So, yeah, so I'm still a little jet lagged.
I bet you're jet lagged, but I bet it was super cool. Like, that's not what you see on the plains of Colorado, for sure.
Definitely not.
So Starla, I want to get to know you a little bit. Hannah, you've been on the show a couple of times. So I should have looked. Of course, I didn't do my homework that well, but I should have looked what episode you were in. But we've talked a couple times. But Starla, I don't know you, and so I want to get to know you a little bit. And then from what I see, looks like you started out doing some road racing. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, my career started, 18 years ago and started with Criterium Racing in the Bay Area in San Francisco, is where I first got introduced to crit racing and road racing. And yeah, kind of had probably about 15 years professional career on the road.
Like, what led you there? What intrigued you about road racing?
I started actually as a bike messenger, a courier, first in Seattle and then San Francisco. And we participated in Alley Cats and I was one of the fastest women. And there was a messenger race team in San Francisco, and they suggested that I come out and try racing. And I did, and I was really bad at it. And it was super frustrating because I knew nothing about like criterium racing or pack dynamics or drafting or cornering in a group or any of that. And so, yeah, I got super frustrated and angry and wanted to do better and just kind of stuck with it. And yeah, learned really, really quickly how not to get dropped in a crit, and then yeah, how to race. And it just absolutely loved it and got hooked. And then my career started.
Huh, that's cool. A couple of questions. One, I've always said, and I'm sure I'm not the one who said it, I heard it somewhere, maybe read it somewhere, bike racing is like 90% fitness, 90% NASCAR, and 90% the game of chess. I'm guessing you had the fitness, but the other two 90% right out the window.
Oh yeah. And I was also coming from riding mostly fixed gears as a career. Right. And so being on a road bike and learning how to like shift into an easier gear to then accelerate at turns was like completely foreign to me. And so I was yelled at a lot and learned really quickly like how to actually corner and accelerate, not be bogged down by a big gear. And yeah, like I just really hated not being good at it. So I learned pretty quickly like what not to do.
And I can't help but wonder, like coasting through corners had to be foreign. How many times did you clip a pedal?
Not too many. I think you do it once and then learn
right
not to do it again.
Right. You're right about that. The other thing I can't help but wonder, you were a bike messenger in San Francisco?
Yes.
Your quads have to be huge. On a fixed gear? How do you
funny.
Even do that?
So it's funny. Everybody thinks that. So the financial district in San Francisco is almost completely flat. Whereas in Seattle, that's where the steep, steep hills are.
Huh.
And all the way from the waterfront up to like 32nd, it's like these stair steps of like super, super steep hills. And so Seattle was the challenging place to ride a fixed gear. In San Francisco, it was relatively easy just because, yeah, the whole financial district is pretty much flat.
Huh. Interesting. All right. So you're a roadie. Hannah, you're a roadie. Cape Epic is a mountain bike race. Hannah, we heard about your story moving over to the world of dirt. Starla, what led you to dirt?
I mean, it's probably pretty much the same thing. In 2019, I was racing for Hoggins Berman Supermint, a UCI team. And at the close of the 2019 season, the team decided to disband. And I had signed with an international team. And so for 2020, my plans were to go race overseas because at that point I was kind of sick of doing the same races over and over again and wanted to do something different. But then the pandemic hit and racing didn't happen. And so it was kind of like one of those crisis moments of trying to identify like what does it mean to me to be an athlete if I don't have a start line, if I don't have a team, if I don't have this job. And so for me, it was kind of making that decision to challenge myself in new ways. And so riding dirt was completely new and completely foreign. And it was just an opportunity for me to continue to like push myself as a athlete and be uncomfortable again and explore new territory. And so once I got into that, and then particularly mountain bike racing, I just fell in love with it and fell in love with the new challenge. And so here we are.
Oh, well, welcome to dirt. Hannah, I've loved watching your progression on the mountain bike. And you're so good at Instagram stories and reels and all that stuff. And so transparent about the challenges of, I would say you're still kind of evolving into a really, really good mountain biker. So it's been fun watching your progression. Cape Epic, though, that's kind of a whole nother level. I guess, first of all, what is Cape Epic? For those of us in the United States who've kind of had this Cape Epic mystique floating around or maybe never heard of it, what is Cape Epic?
So Cape Epic is an 8-day mountain bike stage race across South Africa's Western Cape. And I feel like I should let Starla explain more because Starla is actually the person that decided she wanted to do this and invited me to be her teammate. So I think Starla should speak to how iconic the race is.
Yes. Okay, so this year was the 20th edition of Cape Epic, and it is the hardest mountain bike stage race in the world. It's one of the only mountain bike stage races that is 8 days. It is also the only mountain bike stage race that is UCI rated and that you do as a duo. And so it is one of a kind, pretty much. And the beauty of Cape Epic is that it changes every single year. And the courses, all of the courses, they might recycle them some years. So, but you never do it like the same way, essentially. And so it's always being redesigned, adding new track. It's on private property, most of it. And yeah, I mean, it's just super, super iconic as being the most challenging mountain bike race in the world.
So it's 8 days, it's a stage race. So time or points, what are you racking up?
So you're trying to accumulate the least amount of time.
Okay.
And then placement, you get UCI points.
How long are the days? What's the total and how long are some of the days?
So help me with this, Hannah. So it always changes, but roughly you're accumulating 700 kilometers in total. And how many meters of climbing is it?
It's
lots.
19,000 meters of climbing.
Meters?
This year was the most amount of climbing in the history of Cape Epic.
Oh, and lucky you.
The stages vary from the prologue, which is like 16 kilometers, to the longest stage was like 96 kilometers. But then it seemed to me like if it was a shorter stage, it would have more climbing and probably more technical trails. And so most of the stages, like once you got past the prologue, the shortest day for us was 4 hours. And a lot of them were over 6 hours.
Oh, wow. What's the type of terrain? You said it's on private land. What are the trails like? What are you riding on?
Yeah, so you've got some double track, a lot of really rough single track, some really beautiful groomed single track as well. Riding in South Africa is so different than here. There are no public lands. And so the trails either go through, they're either private and you can be part of a club and have access to them, or you can pay to have access to them, but they're all protected. And so you can't go on Strava and see any of our rides because we're not allowed to upload them. Huh. From the race courses because they want to protect them. They don't want the public trespassing onto these private lands. And so it makes it just really interesting. So it's a completely diverse terrain. So some of it, you feel like you're on like an overland jeep trail. And then next thing you know, you're on this super rough single track where you're just riding over super rocky, like baby heads. And then at other times you're on this super flowy, jumpy, swooping, beautiful groomed track. And so it just completely varies. And, yeah, if you follow along at all, you'll just see, we'll traverse up these incredible mountainsides. And I can't remember, there was one day where I think there was close to 100 switchbacks.
Oh.
And it was just, yeah, I've never ridden or seen anything like it. Like there was one, just one particular section of trail where it had the countdown of switchbacks, and it started at like 37 or something, or at least that's when I started paying attention to the signs. And so you'd do one switchback and then another, and it would be like 36, 35, 34, and you're just doing this count switchbacks. And yeah.
Holy moly. What do you do when you get to the like number one and then zero? Now where do you go? Do you got to do like 700 switchbacks down, or was it a straight bomb?
No, then you would like cross over a road and then you'd get onto another, you know, trail. And so, I mean, it was just an unrelenting amount of switchbacks that day, which, yeah, it was challenging and fun. And
yeah, you're laughing now. Were you laughing then?
No.
Hannah definitely was not laughing.
Dave. Like if there's one,
like I said, I've been watching your Instagram.
There's one thing that I have not yet mastered on the mountain bike, and actually I can probably say I'm a lot better at it now, but it's right-handed switchbacks. I really struggle with those, especially steep and tight ones. And it was so funny because the first stage, there was a climb kind of similar to the one Starla's talking about, where you go up and there's these tight switchbacks, and we had a South African team that was behind us, and I was like, almost every right hand switchback I was having to like unclip and push my bike up the switchback, and I just apologized to them, and I was like, I'm so sorry, like I really struggle with switchbacks. And they're like, you're gonna be a master at this by the end of the week. And I wouldn't say I'm a master, but yeah, that day in particular was like, it was, when the countdown started, we had already ridden up like 40 switchbacks. And then the countdown starts and you look ahead. Because the other thing that's really unique about Cape Epic, and this is actually where I think Lifetime got their idea, is that Cape Epic is always covered by a helicopter. Two helicopters, actually.
Oh.
So you can see the helicopter to the left, so you know you're going to the left, and you look up, and there's just like, it looks as if you're going to go up a mountain face, and it's just switchbacks all the way up the mountain face.
Wow. Sounds fun.
That's another thing about Cape Epic that they do that is unlike any other race, is their coverage of it. It's absolutely phenomenal. The quality and the intent that they put into making it live and then doing daily recaps of it. And they do it by, like Hannah said, by helicopter. But in addition to that, they have, really, really incredibly skilled riders on e-bikes that have the video cameras with them. And so they will follow, generally it will be the leaders or other teams that are in contention with the podium. And so they can cover that front pointy and like fight that's going on. And so they'll be riding along with those teams. And then in addition to that, they also have motorbikes that are just doing absolutely insane things, where you've got these little motos and the guy on the front, and then you've got the guy on the back holding on, but also shooting video live to stream it. And it is just crazy, the places that they're riding and what they're doing. And so their ability and attention to like cover it and bring it to the world absolutely like sets them apart from any other race that I know.
Sounds Tour de France-ish.
I would say even better, because the camera is in the race. I mean, it's directly on the riders, and it's able to broadcast the terrain that you're riding on. And so it just makes it feel like you're really in the race watching the coverage. And that is what made me fall in love with the race. I mean, as long as they've been broadcasting it, like I've been following along and dreaming, but never believing that someday I would participate in it.
It does feel like distant, doesn't it? Like it's so far away, you could never get there.
Yep.
I want to talk about that kind of as a wrap up, but so Hannah, you're not great at making right turn switchbacks at the beginning of the week. Starla, you're kind of laughing. I don't know if you're good at switchbacks already, but I'm sure there were times during the race that one of you was better at something than the other. What's it like to do, gosh, not just a day, but 8 days of widely varying terrain, different distances, long distances, mountain biking with a teammate?
Well, it's awesome if your teammate is someone that you know and that you can communicate with. And that, I think, is probably our biggest strength as a team. Like, you were very correct, Dave, when you said there's things that Starla is really good at and there's things that I'm good at, and they don't always align. Starla is, like, the person that helped me learn how to ride a mountain bike. Like, she is the one that encouraged me to stay on the trails when I was frustrated with it and I was scared and I hated it. So, you know, her skill level is significantly better than mine. And I am a little bit better at, like, sustained efforts. Like, so longer climbs, Starla's better at the punchier, the short climbs. So yeah, we do, you know, we do balance each other out. And compared, I think, to a lot of people going into this, like, we're each other's training partners. We spend so much time riding bikes together already that we know what the other person is going to struggle with. And I think that it was just such a strength of ours, the way that we were able to support each other through the areas where each of us struggle. And we both had bad days, like really bad days.
Different days from each other.
Even maybe different points within the day too. but yeah, we like, our friendship only strengthened through this event, which, you know, I've talked to some other women that have done it, and one of the biggest things they've said is, like, their friendships were never the same, in not a good way.
I mean, I can see that. It could be super stressful, and one of the, I don't know, like, mountain biking is not a team sport. When you, even if, like, there's five people on the same team at the start of a mountain bike race, you all just go, right? And you do your own race. But here, like, you have to stay together. And did you ever want to, like, strangle each other? Like, Hannah, get off, get on your bike, get around that corner. Or did you just, you guys are good enough friends that you could see through that and be patient and compassionate enough to know that, okay, I know Hannah struggles, she's going to get better throughout the week, but when we hit this long climb, I'm sitting on her wheel and she's hauling me up that thing, and so I'm gonna wait for her, and I'm cool doing that.
Yeah, I mean, going into this, I mean, our number one goal was to enjoy the experience and to support each other through it. And like, we already knew going into it that we were going to, you know, have struggles. So like, I have MS and I am heat intolerant. And so like, heat is my kryptonite. And that was my biggest fear going into this race, was that that was going to have a huge impact on our race together as a team. But I mean, Hannah knows this and has always been, I mean, she's been by my side from the moment I was diagnosed. And so she's one of my biggest supporters, and like, I couldn't have imagined doing this race with anyone else. And so we just knew that we were there to share the experience together, to lift each other up, to get through it together and support each other. And so there was never any like frustrations, because we knew that there were going to be, yeah, different things that we would struggle with, different things we would excel at. And it was just all about supporting each other. And no matter what our results were on any day, I was just so incredibly proud of us for getting through it together, for sacrificing everything together. I mean, it was just such an absolutely incredible experience. And I think, like Hannah said, it just made our friendship even stronger.
Huh. Wow. That's cool. As you looked at other teams, could you see the frustration between the two partners? Oh, I said you both just had the same face on, gritting teeth, like, oh yeah, we did.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I mean, I think other teams went into this for a different reason, and or teams weren't friends, and they were just coupled together either by sponsorship or whatever. And so I don't know. I mean, you could just see that there was some infighting or not getting along or frustrations. I don't know. I'm like, Hannah, what was your observation?
Even just like on occasion you'd encounter someone who was far ahead of their teammate. And in, you know, you might say like, hey, how's your day going? And they would just be like, oh, well, my teammate can't get it together. And like, we would have never said that, you know? In a million years, if we, yeah. And we did get separated sometimes, like not super far, but mainly on descents. and there never would have been a moment where we would have been like, oh, well, my teammate just can't figure out how to go down this descent. I think that there was always a understanding between us that this is a team race. And so there is no point in saying my teammate can't do X well, because we're a unit. Like, our strengths are what we can do collectively together, and our weaknesses are the same. So like, for us, I never felt, and I don't think Starla did either, like we never felt any sort of discord or.
I love that. That's awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Like, if there was ever a time that we got separated, it was, I saw it more as like, if I was descending faster than her and she couldn't hold my wheel, that wasn't her fault. It was my fault. And so it was never like placing blame, you know, on the other person for not being able to be, you know, as fast or whatever as the other person. And so it's like, I always felt it was more my problem. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, like, I'll make it easier for you to stay with me, because we both just wanted each other to succeed, and we wanted to succeed together as a team.
Yeah, that's cool. What do the rules state as far as you two staying together?
Yeah, so you always have to be within 2 minutes of each other, and they have timing areas that are hidden throughout the course. Oh. And so you never know where they are, and you can be penalized if you're over that 2 minutes window from your teammate.
Yeah, dig it. That's cool. I gotta say, like, the teammates, and I'm not, you guys don't have to say, oh my gosh, they did not get along, or oh, those guys were whatever, but I was looking at the list, and freaking some of the world's best mountain bikers were in this thing. Annie Terpstra and Mona Mitterwaller. But yeah, like Nino Schurter and Matthew Beers, Lachlan Morton were all there. Was it cool to line up with the best mountain bikers in the world?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was amazing. Just taking to the start line every day and knowing, yes, you're surrounded by the best mountain bikers in the world who have been doing this their entire careers. And yeah, getting to race with them and, you know, be competitive to a certain point. And yeah, I mean, it was just every day, just looking down the start chute at APSA Cape Epic, like seeing that every day was just so incredible. after I had been, yeah, dreaming about it for so long, and then getting to stand there on that start line with Hannah was, yeah, super, super special. And just being, yeah, surrounded by some incredible athletes.
So you mentioned start line every day. That also means a finish line every day. And that means you had a race the day before. What was it like doing so many hard, hard days in a row?
It kind of like, as, and Starla said it would, because she did Breck Epic before this, so she had kind of the experience of doing a mountain bike stage race, but it just turns into Groundhog's Day. Like, you wake up at the same time, you eat the same thing, you go, and there's this, like, awareness of, like, okay, I have to go do this really hard thing that's going to take 4 to 6 hours, and then you finish, you recover, you eat, you, like, there were, of course, days that were a little bit different when we were transferring or something, but the day that I actually found to be the most challenging was the second to last day. And I don't know, it may, like, maybe because it was raining that day or something, but there, it was just like going to the start line that day, I was like, I cannot do this 2 more times.
At that point, Hannah was ready to kill me because I was in great spirits, and because it was finally cool, and I felt like we could finally race because I wasn't being impacted by the heat. And so everybody was just like, smile, have fun, blah, you know, like trying to like input all this like super positivity. And she was like, if one more person tells me to put a smile on or whatever, I'm going to kill him. And I was like, Hey, Hannah. And she looked at me like, I will murder you. It was, I thought it was hilarious. Maybe she didn't so much, but.
She's still smiling.
Yeah.
Hannah, did you ride into that day? Like, did you, how'd that day go?
Yeah. I mean, once the gun went off, like, you're giving everything you have. Like, that's like the bike racer instinct, right? Like, you know that you're going to give everything that you have. Cause that's like, for me, that's a measure of success. It's not where did we finish? Like, what was our result within this incredibly talented group of women? It's, did we give everything that we had? And it's almost more motivating to do it in the team format, because you want to give everything for your partner. And like, knowing everything that Starla did and overcame to be able to be at that event, I was like, I am not going to be the thing that holds her back. So yeah, there's a lot of motivation there.
I'll ask each of you, Starla, starting with you, what was your favorite part?
Oh gosh, there's so many of it, but like my favorite part was just getting to race it with Hannah. Like that experience. I mean, if I had done it by myself, it just would have been completely different, but just being able to share that experience with her, share it with our husbands, it was 100% a team effort. Like, we couldn't have done it without our husband's support and just all of the ups and downs, like just getting to share that with everyone was what was super, super special to me. Like, the, when we took to that prologue to the start shoot, like getting to be on that stage in that moment, being there, looking over to Hannah and being like, we're doing this, we're here, we're doing this, was, yeah, I mean, it was just so, so incredible. So favorite part was just sharing it with Hannah.
That's pretty cool. Hannah, without repeating that same answer, what was your favorite part?
Okay, well, I was going to say that, and I'll say it in a slightly different sense, that my favorite part was the way that we supported each other. I'll add something slightly different. That's I think another really cool part of the race was that, so the day that we had our best result, the last day we got 11th, and that day kind of started out with a longer gravel climb that turned into single track. And we rode well on that first climb. We were in like ninth place on the climb. And we were stoked. We were feeling good. And as we turned onto the single track, Starla's on my wheel and I hear her say, "There's a dog with me." And I was like, I was in the pain cave and I was like, I don't know, Starla's talking about a dog. I'm not sure how she's talking right now. I'm just going to keep going. And then we went around a switchback, of course. And I saw the dog, this cute little white dog, just following Starla.
It was the most magical moment. I was just absolutely suffering. And I'm like, I kept seeing something out of the corner of my eye. And I'm like, am I hallucinating? And because like, I couldn't hear another rider behind us. Like it was just dead quiet. And then I look back and there's this like medium sized, like little like white dog that was just running alongside me. And we would like go down these little hills and then like up these whoops. And it was just like right there. It's just tracking along me the whole time. And I was just like, kept looking back and it was just the sweetest little face. And then finally we get to this road section and I look back and the dog had stopped at the road and like looked at me and then looked back down the trail and then didn't see it again. But I was just like, it was like the little road or trail angel. And it was just sweetest thing.
That's fun. Did you use bacon grease for embrocation? Because that'll attract them for sure. What was the biggest challenge of the week?
Personally, for me, it was the heat. That was just hands down the biggest challenge. I mean, every day we would approach it with race as hard as we can until the heat hits, and then try to start cooling, like keeping me cool, and then just try to survive to the end. And I mean, Hannah was absolutely incredible. Like she would just so we had hydration packs on and then two bottles, and the bottles just had ice cold water in them until they got hot. But our strategy was the hydration packs would feed us and then the bottles were to dump on me. And so Hannah was just incredible. We'd be riding along and then she'd be like, "Water's coming." And then she would just spray it on me. And then we also, Hannah, I'll let you tell this part.
This is the best story. I can't believe we didn't start with this. Okay. So
I know.
Cape Epic does not allow your crews, like your mechanics or team, to be at every aid station.
Huh.
And so instead, they allow you to have a tech box and spare wheels, and you drop these off the night before. They're labeled with your team number, and there's three tech stops along each course. So one of these stops, the team is allowed to feed at. And we figured that Starla's husband would be there with ice. But then we were trying to brainstorm, because it was hot. It was, the hottest day was 115 degrees.
Oh, my.
Yes, it was very hot. So we were trying to figure out, what are we going to do to try to keep Starla's core temperature down? And so we went to the grocery store and we found these thermoses that said they would keep things cold for 24 hours. So the night before the first stage, Starla's husband, when he dropped the tech boxes off, he filled up these thermoses with ice, put it inside the tech box. And on stage one, which was the first really hot day, it was like 10 o'clock, it was already 80 degrees. We pulled into the first aid station. Starla was like, "I'm going to lube our chains." And I was like, "Great, I'm going to make ice socks." And so I run to the tech box, and there's a group of people that are responsible for putting these out. And they're called the Aramex tech guys. And they're watching us. And I run to the box and pull out a thermos. And the thermos rattles, which I'm stoked by. Because I'm like, yes, there's ice in here.
For sure.
And so I just immediately start pouring out the ice to make ice socks. And the guys are watching from their perspective. These two riders come in and pull a thermos out of their box. And then when we opened it up and ice came out, they were like went into just full shock and started freaking out because they couldn't believe that someone had thought to do that.
Wow.
And for the rest of the week, every time Starla's husband went to fill up the thermoses, these guys were just, they'd be like, hey, you gotta come look at what this team is doing. This is the coolest thing. And it was, was the biggest win in the world that thing kept ice cold for that long.
That's awesome. I love that.
It was cool.
Yeah, literally from the night before.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. It was like the best thermos I have ever seen.
Yeah, no kidding. Did it have four letters and one of them started with Y?
No.
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 Oh my gosh. This get him over here.
It cost, you know, we bought it in Rand, but in the dollar equivalent, it was $18. And
oh,
we got
wow.
it from Woolworths.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes.
Starla, I can't let this go by. I don't know that I know anyone who races bikes professionally who has MS. Like, where did this come about? When did it come about? And where are you in your journey in that?
Yeah. So it happened in, oh gosh, my years here. Where are we? In 2022?
I was hoping you weren't going to say 2020 because we had enough crap that year.
Yeah, it was 2022.
It was 2022. It was the strangest progression. So like I've always known that I've had some autoimmune. It's manifested in lots of different ways throughout my life and have never been able to be diagnosed with anything. Hmm. And then in early 2022, got COVID and it wasn't that bad. But then after I recovered, it like I just started to decline and decline pretty quickly. And it started like the sensations, like my hands went numb and then started to lose control of my left hand and then my left arm. And it was getting numbness and like burning and all sorts of weird sensations all over my body. And then eventually was losing control of my right leg and then my left leg. And it was an absolute fight with the medical system to try to get anybody to believe me, to be seen by anyone. And luckily had some friends in LA that had some resources. And so was able to fly out to LA to an incredible team at Cedars. And they eventually did MRIs and found a lesion on my spine that was causing everything. And then through further MRIs and testing, they found lesions on my brain and were eventually able to diagnose me with it. And so they, long story short, I mean, it's so much more complicated than this.
I can only imagine. Like, it's amazing you just raced Cape Epic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in shock because at that time and when I was in the hospital, they were saying because I was on blood thinners and, I mean, at that point, I was struggling to walk. And they were saying, we don't know if you're ever going to be able to ride a bike again or what the permanent damage is going to be from this. I was facing another, like, what does my life mean if I'm not an athlete? And having Hannah come and visit me in the hospital in LA was incredible. And I just had no idea. I had no idea what this was going to look like. And I honestly contribute cycling and just like being an athlete and, you know, continuing to like push myself and exercise to a lot of what my recovery has been. And so what a lesion is, the lesion on my spine, it's damage to the myelin sheath. And that is what essentially sends information through your body for how everything works. Mm-hmm. And so exercise can help to heal the myelin sheath, but it never completely heals. And it took time for me to like regain strength, regain balance. But I eventually got to get off the blood thinners and a bunch of the medication that I was on, that had its own ugly side effects. But now I'm only on an immune suppressor. I get an infusion every 6 months, and that just is in hopes that it stops my body from attacking itself again and causing more lesions. And so, yeah, I mean, how I got from there just a short time ago to racing Cape Epic is, I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's absolutely huge. And the, like I said, the heat is my kryptonite. Like it just absolutely shuts my body down. And like, I can't produce power. I can just no longer really push on the pedals, and it affects my heart rate. And so then like trying to control that, it eventually will affect my vision. And it, yeah, I mean, it's scary. And going into Cape, knowing that it can get really, really hot there, was a scary thought, because I'm like, we're putting all this time and all this resources into doing this, but, and I think that's why we planned so hard, especially with the thermoses and the ice, was to try and mitigate that as much as possible. But when I was planning for the beginning of this season, for like the 2024 season, I was taking like a different approach to it, because last year I raced in the Lifetime Grand Prix. And so that dictates your schedule, like what you're racing. And so many of those races are hot and they're really long. And it was honestly, for me, a really miserable experience. And I didn't want to do that again. I wanted to, you know, set myself up for success and new experiences. And so when I got to just pick what I wanted to do, I was like, why not go for this bucket list, really scary, really hard thing? And I was like, Hannah's the only person I want to do it with, because she understands me. She understands what I'm up against. And I think we could enjoy it together instead of like going with anybody else and having it be focused on the result. I wanted it to be more focused on the experience, because ultimately that's what racing now kind of comes down to me, is about the experience. And so, like I said, when we took to the start line for the prologue that first time, I was choking back tears because it was just such an amazing experience to actually just be there and to have something that I dreamed about for so long and never actually believed that I could do, or because I'm not a mountain biker, right?
Right.
It was something I dreamed of but never believed was possible. And the fact that we were standing there together, it was really just showed that you can really do anything as long as you give yourself the opportunity to do it.
And put ice in thermoses and hide them in the tech box.
The tech boxes.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds to me like, had this conversation first, I don't think I would have had to ask, like, did you guys ever get on anyone's nerves? Did you ever bug each other? Did you ever? Because it sounds like you're lining up at the starting line of the prologue was the beginning of a celebration of your friendship and where you've come from and your ability to be here, even though we're going up 100 freaking switchbacks in 115 degree heat, and heat is my kryptonite. we're in this together and we got it. So that explains everything about your week right there. I think that's gorgeous. I love that. I love that so much. Do you have a favorite picture from the week?
Oh gosh. There's one that Gio took after the prologue and we just have dirt.
The one with the dirt on our team. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, that prologue was the dirtiest, dustiest stage. 90 minutes and we were disgusting. And because you're just going so hard the whole time with your mouth open, like, we just had dust on our teeth. We looked like coal miners.
That's crazy. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A friend of mine from Seattle ended up, like, somebody was missing a teammate and, like, hey, Steve, do you want to go? Ended up going last year. He's the only other American guy that I know that has made the trip over to South Africa to do this. What would you say? What would you guys tell, anyone about Cape Epic, like me dreaming of doing it, somebody in Europe who's listening and, I could never do that. It's so far away. It's so hard. It's so whatever. But what's your message to, the rest of the world about something like Cape Epic?
I don't know that I would have ever thought this was possible without Starla. Because, like, when she told me that she had an entry to Cape Epic, I was like, how, like, are they even going to let us in? You know, like, it was like, we don't have any, because you're supposed to have UCI mountain bike points. And I was like, I've never even done a UCI mountain bike race. I don't know that I ever would have thought that I could without Starla, but I think that what I've learned is with the right amount of planning, it is possible for anyone. And it is a lot of work. The logistics are like the equivalent of having a part-time job for 6 months to get ready for it.
Oh, wow.
So be ready for that. If you're doing it, you know, I think most people that do it do not have a factory off-road team supporting them. So,
correct.
And even the ones that do, like Sophia Vishafanya was a excellent resource for us. Anytime I had questions, she was happy to jump on a call or, you know, she was the only other woman that was really like texting me during the week, like, hey, how did your day go? So, you know, kudos to her, but yeah, like most people don't have that level of support. And so just be ready for like a lot of work. But it's possible, like it is achievable for anyone.
Yeah. I mean, when I looked at like us doing it, like I, all of a sudden it was like, my mind was set on it. I'm like, I want to do this. And it felt like there was barrier after barrier after barrier. And I was just fixated on us doing it. And so I was like, I'm not going to let any of this stand in the way. And it's like, we don't have UCI points. That's fine. Our entry is already closed. That's fine. So pretty much what I did was I crafted a really good story. I looked at previous races where there were 9 women UCI teams and there were 60 men's. And I went to the race promoter, who thankfully was a woman. And I said, I mean, we're a women's team and these are our accolades. Yes, we don't have a ton of experience mountain biking, but we have raced on the UCI professional level. And I just said that I'm like, we need more women racing and you don't have a lot of women coming from the US to race this. And I think you should give us a shot and hopefully we can encourage other women to do the same in the future and increase your women's participation. And so she gave me the go ahead, gave me the okay to do the entry. And then I was like, oh, and we don't have UCI points, by the way. And she was like, that's fine. And so she gave permissions again. And yeah, and then from there, it was just all of the planning, all of the logistics, and it was just one thing after another. And I was like, nothing is going to stand in the way. And so it was just like Hannah said, it was pretty much a full-time job and to make it work, but we made it work and we got there. And so my advice to other people is if you want to do something like this or anything else that scares you, don't give up. You're completely capable of it and you just have to keep working at it. So I think anybody can do it.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that story. I love that story because it relates so well to distance to empty. Tell me about that. That was your jersey, distance to empty. That was your team name. What's distance to empty, and what's your relationship with that?
Yeah, so it's Starla's founded this program. It's called Distance to Empty. And what she does is she helps women in Colorado get to the start line of races, gravel races in particular, some mountain bike. But this is the program is going into its third year. It's had an incredible first 2 years helping, I want to say, 12 women who have all become avid bike racers. And in fact, one of the women from last year signed with BMC as a professional gravel racer this year. Her name's Anna Hulse. So she's extremely talented. She is one of the best, like, she's someone that has this innate ability to descend on a mountain bike. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, cool.
She does have a skiing background, so I think that helps. Anyway, so that's Starla's sort of nonprofit that her and her husband Gino founded. But it has a dual meaning because of the challenges that Starla faces with her physical health. So distance to empty is for them, it's a concept of what is your distance to empty? You know, like how much can you push? And we all have these limitations. You know, for Starla, it's her physical health. For other people, it might be time issues or it might be money. You know, you just, anyone could have a number of issues, but what do you, like, how do you overcome them so that you can truly push yourself? And yeah, if you go out to their website, Starla's husband has a fairly compelling story as well. And so, you know, between the two of them, they've overcome some amazing obstacles to be doing what they're doing and to even just be here today. I mean, the doctors told Starla she would not race a bike again when she was in the hospital.
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away, to be honest. She freaking just got back from Cape Epic.
That's what, like, when people ask me how it went,
I know you know
I'm
that.
like, it went so great because, like, we did it. And not only did we do it, like, we were competitive.
Yep, absolutely. With
So,
zero UCI points.
yeah, now we have UCI points.
Now you have UCI points. I love it. Hannah did a great job of telling us
Oh,
about
awesome.
distance to empty.
I hope so. You would have done a better job.
I don't know about
Well, I mean, it's
that.
you founded it, so what do you mean when you say you help women get to the starting lines of gravel races, dirt races? Like, how do you do that? What do you do to help them get to the starting line?
Yeah, so we run an award program, and so it's application based. We do it every year. This is our third year. And once our women are selected, we partner with Colorado-based race promoters that provide race entry, so a full season of racing. And then all of my race partners, or sorry, sponsors, they also then helped provide kit and other like product to hopefully supply them and support them throughout the season with anything that they'll need, so that they're not expending money, because I mean cycling is not a cheap sport. And so with all of my sponsors, with their support of the program, they hopefully have everything that they need. And then we, with Eliel, who is my kit sponsor, we do a kit store every year. And so I design our cycling apparel, and we launch a new design every year and then open up the store for sales. And all of the proceeds come to help support the program. And so we help with fuel or housing or anything else, so that these women, you know, have the opportunity to go and line up with these races. And this year we also brought on a coach as well. And so, so they're getting that support. So, I mean, we just try and help them have the chance and experience to, you know, try new things and push themselves in ways that they wouldn't be able to otherwise, and really just focused on building that cycling community with a bunch of women, so that they can hopefully encourage other women and show that they belong there as well, because we have women of all sorts of ages and shapes and sizes, and everyone has expressed that they feel like they're imposter and that they don't belong there. And so being able to show up and show all these different representations is hopefully going to encourage, you know, other women to be, you know, confident and comfortable showing up to these events. And so, yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. So literally helping people get to the starting line in whatever way they need.
Exactly.
Well, listen, you guys, we've gone on for more than an hour. I really want to thank you guys for coming on, for sharing your experiences about Cape Epic. Hopefully you are an inspiration for somebody listening to, whether it's Cape Epic or it's the next local 15-mile gravel race that they've been nervous about participating in, or somebody hears this and says, hey, I know somebody who I could help take to the starting line. You guys both have great stories, and I'm glad we were able to get together and share them.
Thanks for having us. It was great to meet you.
Thank you for having us, Dave. It's always a pleasure to sit down and talk with you. It's a fun way to recap the race.
I really appreciate both Hannah and Starla for making the time to come on this week. I hope you enjoyed their stories and friendship. I'd encourage you all to follow them on socials, as well as Starla's organization, Distance to Empty. I'll put links in the show notes. And I did look up to see when Hannah had come on the pod. It was October of 2022, episode 41, when we talked about the state of gravel racing and the first ever UCI Gravel World Championships. Plus, and we didn't talk about this here, but she and her husband Jake were on last summer to talk about the gravel camp that they led in Lincoln, Nebraska, prior to the Garmin Gravel Worlds. That was episode 66. You should definitely download and enjoy them both. Now, if you're looking for a fun but challenging race this summer, check out the Core 4. Core 4 News. After a huge spike in riders and a super thank you to everyone for coming out this year, these guys jumped right back into the fire. It's no surface untouched again for 2024, because Core 4 24 has a sweet sound to it, no doubt. New routes, new distances, and a new you. That's right, y'all, they are mixing it up with more surprises and delights. New for 24 is the Core 40 distance. Just a bump up from the 20 mile, and still has all the farmscapes and B roads and champagne gravel you'd expect from the folks at Core 4, just without the single track. They're telling us 60 is the new 50. Miles, that is. It's a no-surfaced, untouched, podium-eligible route with all the cats in addition to their marquee 100-mile event. It's the perfect blend of competition and community. We want Core 4 to be on your event calendar for 2024. Jump on Bike Reg today, snag your spot before this event reaches its cap. Come ride the wave and get more bodies on bikes. It's blazing hot action every year, and they'll keep the fire stoked all winter long with the 20, 40, 60, or 100-mile route. Core 4 24 has something for everyone. It's time for the next time. Let's go! In addition to all that, they've got some great plans, including a $10,000 prize purse for the Stone Crusher 100-mile race, courtesy of their new title sponsor, River Products Company. And they will be honoring Chris Lillig. He was an Iowa City cyclist who worked at River Products, and he was unfortunately killed by a drunk driver in 1996. There have been many races and rides held in his honor. I used to do the Chris Lillig Memorial Cup in Iowa City. Now, I'm sure Chris would be honored, and he'd still be racing today if he could. So join us this August in Iowa City to honor Chris and enjoy the Core 4. For more information on Core 4 and their new title sponsor, as well as all of the race distances and registration, head on over to core4.bike and why not sign up today? Now, I really appreciate you tuning in each week, and I'd really love it, I'm not kidding, when I say that if you would rate and review this show on your favorite podcast platform, it would really help. And if you want to support the show financially, just look for Bike Talk with Dave at buymeacoffee.com and drop a few coins in the cup. If you do, I'd love to send you a sticker. Now be sure and check out the Bike Talk with Dave channel on YouTube, or you can go to biketalk.bike to stream every episode. Now, I hope you have a great week. Maybe you got to see the eclipse or partial eclipse. It was super cool. I'm recording this and dropping this before the eclipse, but I have plans for a fun interview the day of the eclipse. So you'll have to watch for details on that on Instagram on the Bike Talk with Dave page. So in the meantime, have a great weekend, great week, and remember that nothing compares with the simple pleasure of riding a bicycle.